Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
Ah, yes, the joys of actually coordinating the Midweek Drive over the years, and indeed the old Saturday shows we used to do in Dulwich, has now led to the stage where we've cast time to the winds, a bit like a Christopher Nolan movie, where it's all happening at once, and as Einstein said, the only persistent illusion is that space and time and past, present and future are actually separate entities. Because we brought together two awesome individuals. First of all, our ace actor extraordinaire, writer and all-round general wonderful artist, it's Jonathan Lindsley. How are you, Jonathan?
Hello. I'm pleased to be here. And how are you, Alexius? Are you all right?
I'm fine. And even good. Before your time started at Dulwich, yes, such a thing is possible, we, of course, were joined by the awesomely talented BAFTA award-winning director, Graham Harper. How are you, Graham?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Hope you are.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think back to those days, and of course, what we were doing was frankly just completely it would be illegal now. I mean, that number of people in that sort of small space, we were crazy souls.
I remember climbing up a fire escape to get to that place as well. It was a very strange building, wasn't it?
It showed the passion. And talking about passion, we're also delighted to welcome from North Carolina. I was wrong, Jonathan. We have an international contact with us. Oh. One of our ace North Carolina correspondents is Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Good. How are you?
Well, again, we're still here. We're still functioning. So hopefully we're doing radio programs. But before we actually get into the essence of this, Jessica, would you like to tell us what is the state of play in North Carolina? And has there been much Trump news that you want to share with us?
Oh, I'm not sure about that. The Republican National Convention happened, so that was a thing. And our school is still...
And that's it, you see, Jessica, our school is still...
North Carolina.
for a moment, you just cut out there. It was almost as though the CIA were listening and they heard the words Republican National Convention and, whoa, instant cut, you know?
They know.
I know, Jessica, and I know, in case you're wondering, Jonathan, Jessica isn't the equivalent to the female deep throat. She has to be in deep sort of darkness, etc. It's not all the rest of men.
Okay.
It's just a camera connection, so worry not. It's all right.
Right. She's not incognito.
Yes.
She's so, in North Carolina.
See what you did there, Jonathan? And it was a classic. We will be going on to discuss a variety of things, but Graham, who would you like to chat to first? Would it be ace actor Jonathan Lindsley, or would it be Jessica Burtis, currently based in North Carolina after having endured one whole semester in the University of Lincoln? It's interesting the way Jessica refers to, obviously, the University College as school. It's an Americanism. We appreciate that.
Well, we'll come back to Jonathan in a minute, but Jessica... So what was it like being in Lincoln? What were you doing?
Oh, I was, I was studying English at Lincoln. I miss it so much. It was wonderful. I'm actually today going to call some friends from there and we're going to chat. We've missed each other. But yeah, Lincoln was just amazing. I had so much fun there.
It's a very pretty town, isn't it? Well, I find it pretty. The hill going up to the cathedral.
Oh, yes, it's absolutely
stunning.
And
the area about...
Yes, Steep Hill and Armstrong area. Gorgeous.
As I say, quite a literal notion, Steep Hill. It's called that because it is quite literally quite steep. keeping it simple for all the tourists around the globe, which is wonderful. And so it goes. Where do we... Actually, Jessica, you've got some information, I believe, about Jonathan. So would you like to throw some questions to him as well at this stage? Or indeed, Graham, the floor is now yours, Jessica.
Jonathan, I saw that you had been in the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
That's so cool to me. I just had to ask about that. That's so amazing. How do you, I don't know. That just... I don't, sorry, I'm like getting a little like rambly.
Don't worry.
That's really cool.
Okay, well, let me explain. I was in Pirates of the Caribbean because they were looking for genuine English accents for the evil pirates on Davy Jones's ship for Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, and Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. So it was two movies, and we were half men, half fish. And we had to do auditions in London and then screen tests. And then they flew us out to America when we were given the job. And we were in America for about 2 years between living in the Bahamas, St. Vincent, and in the Caribbean generally, and in Hollywood.
Gosh, so it was a tough job, obviously.
It was very tough. It was difficult. Yeah.
Was it lots of fun? I mean, was Johnny Depp fun? Was it all a lot
of fun? It was kind of interesting. I mean, it was technically interesting because we were mostly CGI characters. So we had to wear grey suits and lots of little golf balls stuck to our suits, which the CGI cameras picked up and then created us with animations. The only bits of us that were real in the end were the eyes and the mouths, because the animators can't animate the muscles around the mouth to make them look real, like human beings. And the fun of it was that it was a Hollywood blockbuster movie. So having, you'll know this, Graham, from being working for British television companies, you don't get particularly well treated. But when you work in Hollywood, there's a kind of whole different ball game in terms of the way you're treated. We had to leave Equity and become members of the Screen Actors Guild, which immediately means that you have to fly first class wherever you go in the world. So that's quite a start. You also have to have your own limousine to take you from home to the airport, from the airport to the hotel or the suite that you're given to live in. They said we might have to rough it when we were in the Caribbean, which meant we only got a hotel suite instead of a bungalow to live in. And it was kind of like that. So yes, I mean, you went from being an actor in, you know, sharing the back room of a school changing for some television show here to having your own camper and being treated very well while we were in the filming. So it was good. It was good fun. But we were working for Disney, so it wasn't that great.
Yeah, there are some meme moments with Disney, aren't there?
They panicked a bit when we were issued our original contract, because they issued us a day rate, which was $1,000 a day, and they thought we'd only be working 10 days on the movie. And as it turned out, we were there for 2 years. So then they panicked a bit because they had to pay us even when we weren't on set in the original contract.
I'm not surprised. Anybody who has to deal with Bill Nighy and his prodigiously sized organ needs that extra danger zone.
Yes. Well,
looking at the size of his organ alone, and I'm talking about a Captain Nemo-sized organ here, Graham.
That is significant. It was a wonderful organ. Actually, Bill was wonderful to work with. And I really, because I'd done a movie before, I'd done Phantom of the Opera with Bill Nighy in Hungary. We'd filmed years before. And so it was nice to return to seeing him. Jonathan Pryce in the movie. A lot of English actors, basically, who spent a lot of time complaining about not being able to get a cup of tea. Because you can't get a decent cup of tea anywhere in the Caribbean, or particularly in Hollywood, because for some reason the kettle doesn't seem to exist over there properly. And they also have this low voltage thing where if you want a cup of tea and boil water, you have to do it in it. If you do have a travel kettle, it takes about 3 hours of planning before you can actually get a boiling kettle. You'll have found that, won't you, Jess, when you return from Lincoln, having been in the land of the kettle.
Yes.
You've returned to the land of the coffee machine.
Yeah, I had missed the tea.
Yeah, exactly.
You may say that, Jonathan, but Jessica introduced myself and our fellow students at Lincoln to the concept of sweet tea, which
yes.
I was completely new to me. I mean, I'll just...
All right, yes.
...with sweet tea.
Well, I like Long Island iced tea. That's one of my favourite drinks. Yeah. But I don't think that counts, does it?
Okay, so Jonathan's a Long Island iced tea fan. Graham, sweet tea?
No, thanks.
No.
So, again... this North Carolina delicacy, which I've yet to try, because, you know, frankly, I think it's potentially very dangerous. But what exactly is it?
It's kind of like, it's almost like black tea with a ton of sugar in it. Yeah. If I can, like, explain it like that.
That's very sweet, I should imagine.
Black tea with a ton of sugar. If that's not the name of the next sequel to Pirates of the Caribbean, I frankly don't know what it is, you know? Black tea with a ton of sugar. Unbelievable.
Many builders in this country would enjoy that.
Yes, I agree.
Graham, how can you make that gross comment about the people who actually are key workers working outside and developing all manner of wondrous things there? I do believe, actually, while she's saying farewell to a number of other folks, Sarah Huntley's joined us. How are you, Sarah?
Fine. I'm so sorry, everybody. Yes, I'm here.
Hello, Sarah.
Graham,
Hello, Sarah.
As we know with Sarah, she always likes to make an entrance. So he's just checking to see that sort of Jessica's online. She's doing the holiday. We're ready into the Pirates of the Caribbean thing. And then, like some kind of crazy midweek drive, Keira Knightley, Sarah Huntley arrives, which is brilliant.
If only I look like her.
I think it's very difficult to tell the difference, to be frank. And Jonathan's worked with Keira, so, you know, he obviously confirmed from that sort of point of view. Did Keira complain about the lack of tea-making facilities when you were on the set, Jonathan?
Actually, she wasn't. She didn't complain about anything, really. She was quite quiet, kept to herself a lot of the time. She was very young, of course, when I was working with her. I mean, she's much younger, more experienced actress now. I don't remember complaining about tea. I just remember importing travel kettles in a big way into Grand Bahama. That was a major job, because I got my wife to send me, I think I sent 8 travel kettles from the UK in a big box. And it arrived at the post office there, where they wanted me to pay import tax, which was quite interesting. For they obviously thought I was smuggling kettles into the, but I was handing them out in the hotel, because the hotel just had coffee machines and you couldn't get boiling water. And the thing was about, the thing is about when you order tea, I found anyway, wherever I went in America, was that they put a tea bag in some hot water and then they bring it to you, which is fine if you're in a restaurant and they're only about 10 yards away from the kitchen. But when you're in a hotel and they bring you, they have to go up in the lift and then along the corridor and then they knock on your door and then you come. So by the time you get a cup of tea, it's fairly lukewarm and this rather sad tea bag in it. Of course, they don't bring you any milk either. So it's a really extraordinary drink.
This is outrageous, Jonathan. I mean, frankly, hopefully the Disney company have actually started getting their act together now so that actors are employed. I mean, let's say Sarah gets a contract.
I seriously doubt that.
And Graham, as a director, if Disney approaches like we'd like you to direct this movie, etc., check out the tea contract first.
Absolutely, do that. Yeah.
I have worked for Disney here in England doing children's dramas, etc. I personally wasn't terribly impressed by the way they behaved to everybody, but hey, that's the way they are. So.
Yeah, it all comes down to the tea. And as Jessica will say, that's the Boston Tea Party all over. That's
there
yes.
go.
The Boston Tea Party.
They were simply trying to get better kettles. That's all. It wasn't tax and representation. They just wanted better quality kettles.
So really, they were making one huge sweet tea, weren't they? Because if they'd been a sugar ship next to the black tea ship, they could have jumped the whole lot in the harbour, mixed it all together, and you would have had masses of black tea, sweet tea.
And frankly, I'd put anybody in the direction of the last 5 or 6 minutes of this radio program to actually suss out the meaning of black tea, the curse of black tea, and the need for greater kettles.
Yes.
Thank you. may well feel as though life is taking a slightly peculiar turn, shall we say. First off...
Have you got notes to keep up?
No, it's very important to you and coffee.
Mm.
I once worked on a job, which was a voice training job for, a rather strange... sorry, I've been in meetings all day and I can't speak anymore. A rather strange, cheap telephone company. Anyway, and I had to get up there on a train for 3 hours, stay the night, get up at 6 o'clock and go and then work with, they're one of those things where they said, oh, what's the deal? How many people are you going to train that day? And I had about 50 people and it should have been 10, which was stupid because you couldn't train everybody properly. But the thing that really, really, and I have to join on the tea coffee bit here, got on my nerves, there was no cup of tea, no coffee, and everybody needs that first thing in the morning just to start you off. Or with me, it's a bit of a, I don't know about the rest of you four, but it is actually like, it's cathartic. I'll get a coffee and then the ideas will happen, and then, or I'll just have a coffee and think about this. And to the point, actually, at lunchtime, they said, oh, we need to get through everybody, Sarah. We're going to give you a 20-minute lunch break.
And I just 1,200-second lunch break.
I can only do this. This is what's reminding me. I can only do that for you if on the hour, all through the afternoon, you could bring me, please, a cup of tea and a cup of coffee or something. They went... I do that half again. Well,
come yeah, it's very good.
And I just thought, actually, and then I got back on the train with my fellow trainer, a very lovely chap called Jonathan Hasden, takes everything in his stride. And the one thing we went on about is, how dare they? Not even a sandwich, but no, worse than that, no tea or coffee. And we've literally been working for something like, basically 48 hours, really, without proper refreshment. So it's terribly, terribly important.
This, of course, could be at the heart of the current deadlock in the Brexit negotiations. Simple misunderstanding between our friends in Europe and, of course, the British need for tea. Yeah. Jessica, who knew what you were starting with that particular question? But then again, let's carry on.
I had no idea.
What's your next question then, Jess?
I would have to say... Sarah, Jonathan, and Igret, I know all of you have been very involved in acting before, and I was wondering, do each of you have a favorite role that you remember specifically?
Oh gosh, that's difficult. It's always difficult when people say your favorite role. I kind of like playing in Shakespeare. I've always loved the words and the challenge of making sense of Shakespeare. I once did As You Like It. And we took it on tour from the York Theatre Royal. And we went out and I was playing one of the shepherds as well as many other parts in the show. There's a scene where the two shepherds discuss sheep. And of course, nobody remotely understands that section of the show. And it's one of those things where Shakespeare wrote, a rural... a comedy, but we went to a place in rural Yorkshire and we played the town hall of this village, and all of a sudden we delivered these lines about ewes and tups and sheep farming, and there was a huge roar of laughter from the audience. So I've got to say that was one of my favorite moments, actually, which was that if you get the right material to the right audience, then you can always get a laugh and enjoy yourself.
I think that's well said, Jonathan, because actually sheep tupping in Shakespeare in Yorkshire is clearly one of those areas which needs to be explored.
Yes. It was in a town called Massham, where Theakston's Old Peculiar, the beer, comes from.
More than that, Jonathan, Massham, or Masham, if you actually look at it spelt, you think it's Masham.
Yes.
No, it's Massham.
Yes. Massham.
It's actually the location of the annual sheep racing derbies. Each year, the sheep run through the streets of Massham. I have been there, understandably, in a professional capacity, obviously. And they did provide excellent tea. There we are. Something to think about, Jessica, on your return to the British Isles, if COVID ever allows. Check out yes. Nassim and its sheep racing.
It's on the list.
Sorry, so, I suspect you haven't sheep raced in Cornwall, but what other things would you like to chat to either Jonathan or Graham or Jessica about?
Well, I was just thinking, I was listening to somebody talking about the lack of theatre because I was listening to Radio 4 last night and it was repeating some of the plays that were in about to happen at the Orange Tree and in London, and they tried to put them on in such a way that you could listen to them on the radio. And there was a little preface beforehand, and they were saying, it was very moving actually, that theatre is something that is, it happens and it goes. And like we were talking about with Angela Rippon the other day about how people remember you and moments. But I think the thing as an actor, which is so profound and happens when you get it right a few times, is you know in those few moments, and you probably only get a few, and I might not get any more now.
Oh, come.
When it works, when it really works. And for me, it's sort of comedy with pathos and the moment. So I have three favourite roles, and I'd love to go back into my life younger again and know that those are going to be profound. Obviously, one of them is with, I love working with Graham, and I loved all the things I've done with Graham, but I particularly liked Rosie the Anaesthetist because I thought, hey, it's so childish of me, but actors are childish. I remember being in the lift where they filmed, well, didn't film in the lift, but at Bristol Hospital, and having the scrubs on and going up in the lift, and somebody thought I was a doctor, and I thought, oh! And also with another actor I happened to know who Graham had cast, we decided that over the mask we were having a romantic relationship, and we'd done all this kind of Stanislavski background. And we both met the other day and said, do you remember all the subplot we did? And we go, oh yes. And then when you see it back and you edit it, or when it's been edited, you realise never say too much. You see what comes out. So
Graham, when you were directing Casualty, did you realise that Sarah and some of the other team were actually having this little series of subtexts and planning in the background? I mean, I've always seen you more as a Brechtian distanciation person.
Yes, that's me.
So, and it was just pure luxury to be working with your best friend as well, like being working with Graham, because you don't, it's not so scary. And Rosie the anaesthetist, and ironically, I've grown a daughter who wants to be an anaesthetist, so that's a bit weird. Yeah. But the other two plays that I absolutely adore, and I would love to play part, and it's because I think particularly now when people are all very stressed, and you think, if you can bring out in the character something that helps somebody else go, oh, I felt like that. Oh, I feel a bit, I felt a bit happy, sad, all at the same time. So the two that I really would love to do again, and I'm too old to do, is The Norman Conquest by Alan Ayckbourn. I played Annie in that. And it's a series of three plays that interconnect the same six characters, and you see them in the garden, in the dining room, and can't remember what the other one's called, but it's the same weekend. It's a very clever idea in different time scales of what's going on and the interaction between the characters. And Annie is a bit of a downtrodden person, and Ayckbourn's very good at writing about people that have tremendous ideas but never quite get there. And she's going to go away for a dirty weekend to East Grinstead with her brother-in-law. But there's some wonderful lines in that, like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just mooching about, you know. But the pathos there. And the other one that I absolutely loved doing was Noel Coward's Hay Fever, playing Sorrel, who's a disgusting, like that, the whole, screeches the whole way through. What I was going to say was, not from a showy-off point of view, but I'm sure we all know there's a few points where you can say, in a film or a play, when you get that hushed tone, or you just hear someone start laughing or start crying, that as a group of people you work together to make that moment happen. And that moment to me is so important, because somebody else is going to go away and think, yeah, that's how I felt when my wife left me, or yeah, that's how I'm kind of feeling, I'm a bit confused about my life at the moment. Or and it's very cathartic, I think, for everyone to share that. And I think that's what a lot of artists and Graham and you creating a radio show each day. You don't know what's going to happen, Alex. And I think...
Oh, I don't know. We did the rehearsal several times, so we should be okay for that, surely.
I think that's what... You know, me and my girl were going, well, what can we watch? And we've seen that done. Like, you want to experience something new, however difficult your day's been. And if you can have that, it just helps everyone get me through. And I've so missed not seeing my friends and being with my fellow artists. And that sounds a bit arty-farty, but I think that's how I'm
sounds a lot better than the Archers' attempts to do the Shakespearean soliloquies recently, but that's a different line entirely. Apparently they're going back to the studio now. Jessica, epic answer there. I mean, heaven only knows what Jonathan's going to say in terms of movie choices and so on. Before he answers, but briefly, Jessica, what was it about Pirates of the Caribbean that you particularly liked?
Oh, I think it's kind of a big part of my childhood, I'd say, just watching it. I still love to watch it over and over again. I think it's just such a good example of a modern movie who kind of takes an old setting but makes it entirely new. I think that's kind of rare to find. And I think it just did something where people who, young and old, just really want to explore that world and just dive into it. So I think it was so cool that you were a part of making that.
Thank you.
Yes, I was actually watching it this very afternoon, still trying to work out where Jonathan actually is between all these layers of makeup and such like, but I'm sure I'll find out somewhere along the line. I'll sort of say, he's over there. It's a bit like trying to say, I mean, at least with Andy Serkis, you know he's Gollum, you know, it's fair enough. But
we were interchangeable, Alexis. The computer, basically, once it knew who you were kind of, the way they discovered you was that they stood you in what was, I can only describe as an upright MRI scanner. And they scan you from head to foot down to your toes. And then the computer knows exactly your dimensions. And so then if there is another performer or a person standing in a similar suit with a similar little golf balls all over them, and we had them on the gloves and on the hats and things like that.
Technically, they're referred to as motion capture sensors.
But they're not sensors. They're just little blobs of white. And basically, what the computer then does is, if it recognizes enough points of reference, it puts you there. So, for example, when Bill Nighy went to New York, they asked me if I would stand where Davy Jones was standing, and then the computer makes me Davy Jones for a little while, or vice versa, if I'm not there or whatever. So there were three people who played all our parts. There was the stunt guys who did the fighting and the jumping off the masts and waving swords around and all that kind of stuff. And then there was the actors who played when we had to speak and when we were doing the close-up. And then there was a guy who just stood there in a grey suit so that we didn't get tired. So
he
that
was
we would sit
after the tea, Jonathan.
I mean, that we would sit. Well, they were like hopeful that we would fall off the boat or something, because then they would have our job. That was you got that impression from those people. But it was interesting. Technically, it was a very interesting experience.
I mean, clearly a blockbuster movie, a big movie, a huge movie. I mean, I know, Graham, you've worked on some huge television productions and so on. But in terms of coordinating that, is that something which appeals to your good self in terms of the coordination, the planning and such like?
Because I've never been involved with motion, what do you call it?
Motion capture.
Thank you, motion capture.
I'm doing it now. I'm not actually real. This is not me. I am actually...
Yes, Alexis is CGI'd in the studio there.
Yeah.
I probably would find it really frustrating, to be honest, but that's because I've never actually been involved with anything like that. I've done a lot of CGI work in quite hefty productions, and that I enjoyed. But this feels a bit alien to me. I don't know why.
It was better than normal CGI, Graham, because we didn't have green screens. So it was the first time that George Lucas had used George Lucas's company, Industrial Light and Magic, and they'd invented a triangulated motion capture cameras, three of them, so that we could be in the action with the live action actors who were also in costume. So they were picked up by the ordinary cameras. And then we were integrated into the scene without a green screen, which was, it was very complicated, but actually it worked. The only interesting thing was that for the other actors to react to us, we had to have pictures of our characters pinned to the chests of our costumes so that they knew who we were, because we all looked the same. We all looked alike. We all had grey, like ski suits, but with little, like a checkered flag on our bodies. It was quite an interesting
look. Like Polka Dot look. Man from the DC Universe fandom, which is where I was last week, enjoying 8 hours of online virtual entertainment.
Yes, exactly strange. Like that.
A new villain, guys. Polka Dot Man will be featured in Suicide Squad in upcoming times, etc.
It's well, nice to know.
Yeah. Well, it's either that or I was thinking actually about Sarah's question from a few months ago. She was saying, who was my first sort of major sort of person, which I thought is, and there we are, actress who played Becky Thatcher in Huck Finn, The New Adventures of Huck Finn, holding it up for the whole sort of sequence there. An actress called Luann Wilson, I believe, who effectively, Luann Haslam, don't know what happened to her, but basically, I don't know, Jonathan, do you remember The New Adventures of Huck Finn?
To be truthful, Alexis, that one slipped by me. I'm probably a bit older than you, so perhaps it wasn't around when I was a child.
There we are. Sarah, no idea whatsoever. Known, of course, for the character Ted Cassidy, who played Injun Joe in Adventures of Huck Finn. They could never make it today. Different reasons entirely. But there we are.
Yes.
Graham, any particular thoughts you'd like to share with us in what has zoomed by so far, quite literally, see what I did there, but actually talks about tea, talks about motion capture, talks about North Carolina. Who would you like to have a few final words with?
Just quickly, can I just tell you a quick story? I was a child actor, but there was a moment in my life when I decided this is not for me. And that was, I did quite a lot of work in television as a kid in the 50s and 60s. And then... when I was 17 or 18, I had learnt to drive. I got a job as a driver, stroke actor, taking a school tour around the whole of England. And I was an actor. I wasn't the director or whatever. And we were doing a lot of shows, including Julius Caesar. And I played one of the characters who has to make a big speech to the masses. And I had asked a fellow actress called Faith Curtis if she would just stand by the side with this book, with the script, just in case I forgot my lines, because I only learnt it two nights before. So we got to the big speech, and I started doing this big speech, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears, blah, 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 blah. I got through about 10 lines, and I turned to her, panicked, because I'd forgotten the next line. And I said to her, I can't forget the lines. And she sort of understood, picked the book up. I went over towards that side to speak to the masses, that side of the stage. And I said to her, it's upside down. And she didn't understand. I said, no, it's upside down. And she still didn't understand. I said, the bloody book's upside down. And there were 200 kids in there, all collapsed with laughter. The headmaster came up to the producer and of the show at the end and said, well, that has to be the worst production of Julius Caesar I have ever seen. And that was the decision I made then, to definitely become hopefully a director, but work in production and forget acting, because it was dreadful.
So clearly the schoolmaster actually believed in positive affirmation then, which was nice.
Oh, yes, he left a very, very big mark.
Building on that whole sort of system. Very quickly, Jonathan, was Gore Verbinski a similarly motivating director, or did you never see him?
Oh, no, we saw a lot of Gore. Basically, he was great fun. He liked us a lot. We were his go-to in times of trouble, when he couldn't get the other actors to perform or the weather wasn't good enough. He called us in because he could use the CGI and it didn't matter whether it was raining to us, because we lived in a ship under the sea. So we were soaking wet from word go. So when there was a storm in the Caribbean, we were the go-to actors. But no, Gore was a very good guy. He started out actually directing music videos. That's how he started. And they came to him and asked him if he'd be interested in doing this. And you know, Pirates of the Caribbean is based on the Disney theme ride. It was there was no sort of story beforehand. They just thought it might be quite nice to make a movie. It was Gore's idea to make a movie promoting the ride at Disneyland. And so that's how it came about. So basically, yeah, Gore was very interested in the idea, but he believed in what I also believe in, which is there needs to be a bit of truth. I think what Sarah talked about as well, which is this where you relate to the character and the audience relate to you relating to the character. And it certainly was true that they did a lot of research. I know the writers did a lot of research on real pirates, and that's where they got this idea that they were rock stars and that they were of their day, they were very well known, but they were bad boys and all that kind of stuff. It's interesting.
I still say, and I know I've had lots of disagreements with our film critic Richard Fitzwilliams about this, but for me, Pirates of the Caribbean, much more verisimilitude in that than Master and Commander. But maybe it's just Russell Crowe's acting. I don't know. Maybe it's just
What the heck? Oh, I quite like Russell Crowe. Don't knock Russell.
But I have to say, a great in Gladiator, great in lots of other things, but Master and Commander, I think he actually hams it up a bit. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. I mean, yes. I mean, he does ham it up in quite a lot of things, but
exactly.
He's eminently watchable. That's what I think. Anyway.
Of course. But he's no Jonathan Lindsley, or indeed Sarah Huntley, or Graham Harper, even if he was considering gender realignment. But that's a different line. Graham, you need to ask the last two questions to our quartet of quality, including obviously your good self. Off you go, Graham. Last two questions, please.
So it's my version of it. Have you all had a very good time on this programme?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And it was a joy to meet you again, Graham.
Oh, thank you very much. And you.
Thank you.
Lastly, or secondly, would you come back again and visit us?
Yes, I'd be quite happy to come back again.
Very quiet.
Yeah.
It was the pause that I thought, you know, is it something to do with the lack of sweet tea? I thought, is that dropping out from North Carolina?
Yeah.
I asked the question.
Jessica and Sarah, in fact, Jessica, you're already booked, I think, for next week's Resonance Rewind, which, of course, we'll be studying, or looking at, shall we say, not studying, it's a bit more fun than that, but we'll be having a review of Upload, the latest Amazon Prime series, in which we never actually pass away. We just transfer, we just upload our consciousness into a whole digital heaven.
I've watched it. It's really good.
Yeah. Thank you, Jonathan. Actually, very quickly, Jonathan, your thoughts on Upload?
I thought it was fantastic. I think it's a brilliant idea. When the series ended, I wanted to know what happened next. And I hope they make another series. Yes, I hope they make a season two. Very good.
Post-COVID, Jonathan Lindsley, Sarah Huntley, Jessica Burtis, and Graham Harper. Graham, of course, back for Jamie Anderson. Thunderbirds, Argo, and more.
Yes.
We will speak again very soon. Keep on keeping on, and happy trails.
Where did you get that?
On your feet.